I'm not a big fan of Medicare for all. I mean, I welcome the debate. I think that we should have health care for all. I think that the Affordable Care benefit is better than the Medicare benefit. But we have invited advocates for it to testify in Congress, in the Ways and Means Committee, in the Budget Committee, in the Rules Committee, being respectful of the point of view. But it is expensive. Who pays is very important. What are the benefits that come in there? So I would think that hopefully, as we emerge into the election year, the mantra will be more health care for all Americans, because there is a comfort level that some people have with their current private insurance that they have. And if that is to be phased out, let's talk about it, but let's not just have one bill that would do that.
Oh! It's Friday, November 8th, 2019. Welcome to Raging Chickens Out the Coop podcast. Yeah, we missed last week, everybody. And oh, man, we were rested up for today. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, I talk to our Capitol muckraker in chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. Today's show, whoa, what a week. It was election week, all. Kentucky's governor's mansion turns blue. Looks like Trump's read the transcripts rally in Lexington on the eve of the election, well, it didn't work out so well for the Republican incumbent. You know, the guy who was Trump before Trump was Trump. Before corporate Democrats joined calls by Republicans like John Kasich to move to the center, they would be wise to remember that it were the teacher strikes and the teachers who gave the Democrats the governor mansion, not some dishwater appeal to bipartisanship. Looking at you, Buttigieg. Virginia goes Democrat, too, from House to the governor's office. It is a trifecta, everybody. That's huge. The left is making its insurgency. Well, can we even call Virginia purple anymore? Don't think so. And Gordon Sondland. Yes, Trump's EU ambassador flips on his boss. The transcripts are scathing. But Sondland wasn't the only person deposed before the impeachment investigators that sought transcripts of the depositions released to the public. That was a really awkward sentence. There's more transcripts that came out, is basically what I'm trying to say. And a giant uh-oh was heard coming from the general direction of the White House. And Ayanna Pressley endorses Elizabeth Warren for president. Is this a split in the squad or evidence that progressives are beginning to deepen their roots in the Democratic Party? And as you heard her, Nancy Pelosi nearly put me to sleep, freaking going on Bloomberg News saying that she's not a fan of Medicare for all, and tells some, I don't know, some fiction pulled right out of some weird-ass fantasy novel pulled from the DLC archives about Medicare for all not being so great. I don't know what the hell's going on. And another billionaire prepares to enter the presidential race as a Democratic hopeful. Yes, Michael Bloomberg will demonstrate to the world, just like Tom Steyer, how much money you can burn through to stroke your ego. Oh yeah, and Jefferson Beauregard Sessions,
that's a felony also,
is jumping into the race to get his old Senate seat back in Alabama. Looks like the biggest threat to his seat will be Trump. Yes, Trump is actively campaigning against Sessions and even saying jokingly that he'd move to Alabama to run against Sessions himself.
Go.
And Bill Fletcher Jr. Took to the pages of In These Times once again to make the case for social justice unionism. In the wake of militant labor victories, business unionism still dominates the leadership of many small and large unions. Not that I would have anything to say about that. Oh, yeah. And next week, public impeachment hearings begin next Wednesday. Grab your popcorn, grab your day drinking. It's going to be all sorts of stuff going on Wednesday. And they actually, Democrats saying that they're looking to vote on impeachment even as early as before Christmas. Whoa. Here in Pennsylvania, Philadelphia votes a candidate from the Working Families Party to city council. First time ever that a candidate for one of that is not from one of the major parties will win a seat on the council. Congrats to Kendra Brooks. Boop, boop. Over half of Pennsylvania's population now lives in counties that are controlled by Democrats. Democrats swept every open seat in Delaware and Chester counties and then took control of Bucks, Lehigh, and Monroe. I don't know about the Monroe, though. I think Monroe was still out. Did they come
Monroe
in?
Commissioners.
Commissioners. Gotcha. And will these victories lead to a PA Dem trifecta in 2020? Fingers crossed. Feet on the ground. Will Bunch cautions Philly suburbanites not to get too confident about this week's major, huge election victories. Keep our nose to the ground and keep on organizing. I don't see any reason to doubt that, given the trajectory of things. And Scranton gets its first ever woman mayor. Paige Cognetti, who ran as an independent, won the special election for mayor last night. Her campaign slogan, Paige Against the Machine, will now bring progressive politics to Northeast Pennsylvania. She cut her teeth writing a scathing report of corruption to Scranton School District for PA Auditor General Eugene DePasquale. And Abscuff's leadership, yes, the faculty union for the state system of higher education faculty, began its big PR push to persuade members to vote in favor of the new contract next week. Many questions remain as to what Abscuff's leadership's embrace of the new Posse chancellor and its interest-based bargaining will mean for the organizational gains achieved as part of the union's 2016 strike. And then looking at what was actually in the tentative agreement, which faculty have to vote on next week, there may be a lot of people scratching their head about, like, so why are we playing nice if this is what we get? And Raging Chicken is awaiting the results of its right-to-know request about Legionella bacteria found in multiple buildings across campus at Kutztown University. Right? I was hoping to be able to bring some of that to you, but apparently this little certified mail package that they're sending to the mail, because there was too much stuff, right, to send me electronically, is somewhere stuck in limbo back of some sort of mail room. So next week, folks, next week. And in today's last call, Elon Musk makes the case that SpaceX's new Starship could cost as little as $2 million per launch, way below the cost of even small rockets. Boeing trying to stay relevant in the race to get back to the moon. Aerospace Goliath presented NASA with its plan for a simplified human lander system. It always makes it great when you're sending people to the moon and you put them in something that sounds like antiseptic. This is the human lander system. That's great. Oh, boy. And the director of the Defense Intelligence Agency, Army Lieutenant General Robert Ashley, painted a dark picture of near future real space wars as Russia and China are rapidly developing weapons to be deployed in space. Yes, he made the marks part of his keynote speech at CyberSat 2019. Industries. Are we actually going to get a space hotel in the near future? Well, the Gateway Foundation is making moves. And Free Will has got some amazing releases coming this week. That's tomorrow. At both locations, you're going to get the Plum Cinnamon Mash, which I'll talk more about, and a Sweet Cherry Apricot Mash, both coming out on Saturday. And this past week was their annual release of Special Cookie. Special Cookie is their annual Imperial Spice Brown Ale. And they still had some leftover bottles from 2018 that they stashed away of their Rum Barrel Aged Special Cookie. I don't know if both the Special Cookie and the Rum Barrel Aged Special Cookie were released on Wednesday. So I don't know if there's any of those left, but hey, I'm going to check it out. We want to remind everybody, tune into the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You stream the show live at freespeech.org or tune in on the Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. And make sure you listen to Rick's daily podcast on iTunes, Podbean, or wherever you get your podcasts. Just look for the Rick Smith Show. And if we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. You can help support Pull No Punches homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. Look, the best way to invest in keeping the media in the movement and movement in the media is, well, become a member, right? Yeah, you can even go to our website, ragingchickenpress.org. There's a big blue donate button. You can give us what you can. But the best way to help us out is become a member for as little as $5 a month by going to patreon.com/rcpress today. Sean, I feel like I am on in fast gear. Like somebody has got to slow me down a little bit today. I think it's I'm jonesing a little bit from not being on the podcast last week, I think.
Yeah. No, recovering from the week. So
recovering from the week. It was, I mean, what a week, man. What a week.
Yeah, I, yeah, no, I mean, like, I where do we start?
Well, let's talk Election Day. We'll start there because I think that's, you know, we'll kind of look at national. We'll get some into some of the Pennsylvania race. We're going to have a lot to say in today's second segment on Pennsylvania because, man, there's I mean, just huge things going on. But, I mean, I think you see what's going on nationally here is that, you know, Kentucky going blue, at least in the governor's mansion, that was not true down ballot. Virginia, after the kind of all the gerrymandering crap was kind of thrown out and they actually had fair districts, now you find Virginia is actually the House and their Senate and the governor's
office. Wait, did they have fair districts with Virginia or no? Or was that recently? I didn't know if their state maps got thrown out.
Not like I can give you the details on it. I'll look it up as we go into it.
I didn't know that if that was the case, but I thought there was just a big push to go after it, like with Pod Save America had the Fuck the Jerry campaign with going after key races to try to get people over the edge.
Yeah.
No, but like anyway, like the Democrats in Virginia will now control gerrymandering, mm-hmm. Redistricting. When it comes to the 2021 census or the census next year. And that means having a state like Virginia go blue, like that means that there's going to be a lot more Democratic representatives going to Congress from Virginia. And, you know, Virginia is going to stay like this for the next 10 years at least.
Yeah. And then, and before there's any naysayers out there being like, well, then the Democrats are just doing what the Republicans have just did. That's actually not the case. The thing is, you got to understand, in the last election, right, where the control over the House of Delegates in Virginia was decided by like picking names out of a hat.
A lot.
Right. I mean, it was because they actually got the Democrat and Republican for one seat actually got the exact same number of votes. Right. So, yeah, it doesn't happen often, but that was just they actually had to pick it out a lot. But the Democrats statewide, I think, received something like over 55% of the vote, I believe. Right. It was Democrats across state over 55% of the vote. Yet they got a small fraction of the of the seats when it comes to the kind of like national elections. And so that was why there was such a strong push in order to kind of make sure that they could win this one, now, especially they were only lost by one election or one vote last time. And now you've got like full control in the state. And I think you're right. This is going to have long term impacts.
Yeah. I don't know if Kentucky – I think Kentucky would have nerves again with the teacher strike. And Bevin was just that bad of a – like you had to work to get kicked out of office in Kentucky, and that's what Bevin did.
Yes, exactly. I mean he worked real hard. He worked real hard to get kicked out of office. I mean he – but, you know, look, I mean the thing is that not only did he – Yeah, he worked real hard to do this, right? But all the credit goes to those teachers, right? The teachers and the mobilization that took place. Because, you know, if you read some of the the press in Kentucky, right? That those teachers, right? That kind of did the statewide strikes in Kentucky. They were actively mobilizing, door knocking,
also knocking on doors,
exactly,
circulating petitions,
exactly,
yeah.
They basically turned what they did in that strike into a grassroots mobilization effort in order to get rid of the Republican. They weren't as successful down ballot, right? I mean, you got to understand Kentucky is an extraordinarily kind of conservative state for the most part. But
Andy Beshear, who won, she gave a huge shout out and thanked unions.
That's right,
and thanked working families for this victory.
Did you hear the crowd when he said that, too?
They went nuts.
They went nuts. Yep.
You know, when we have this talk about, like, moving to the center, no, fuck that. If we're going to do it, we're moving – it's militant labor down south that, you know, brought this election. I mean, what else is there to say? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
it's a militant labor action, a bunch of strikes, and the unions getting involved, and this is why the right wants to crush unions.
Right. And let's say
because you know, we have the people, we have the manpower, and we have like the labor, actual labor, willing to go out and knock doors like this.
That's right.
And to get out the vote machine.
That's right. And we should say, right, that those teachers, right, the teachers that push for the strike, They initially were working against their own union leadership, who didn't want to touch that whatsoever. And the union leadership had to come along with the teachers, right? Because they thought it was going to be a disaster. But then the teachers basically, nope, then the leadership eventually got on board, right? We got to remember that that is the model for kind of like rank and file organizing in labor unions or any organization, right? You're going to have a cautious leadership unless the members are mobilized. And then eventually, if the leaders want to be remain leaders, they're going to decide, you know, shit or get off the pot. You're going to be with us or against us, right? There's no better place to say that out in the Harlan County, too. You know, which side are you on? So,
yeah,
that was a huge, huge note. And I also think, though, that, you know, in the Kentucky instance, you know, a lot of people immediately started putting the question about, well, what does this mean for Mitch McConnell? I don't know how much that's going to transfer. We shall see.
Mitch McConnell's going to be spending a lot of fucking money to save his seat.
That's right. And I think that now you're going to find him being a little bit more.
That means you're bleeding resources out of the Republican Party, out of stuff going to people like Susan Collins or other important Senate seats that they need to hold on to. Their money's going to be bled in that race by Mitch McConnell in order to preserve himself, at the very least.
Indeed. Well, that's why it's so good that our good friend,
that's a felony also.
Surprise!
I think that's what
you're going to the jail.
We're going to the jail. I actually don't have that one listed here. I can't believe it. You're going to the jail. I'm so bummed.
But Jefferson Beauregard
Sessions,
who is named first and second name, are named after Confederate generals.
Yep, indeed. Beauregard, I swear it's a name. It's a name. Stop picking on me.
But it's good. It's good to see the classics coming back. Yeah. You know, it's like putting on MMR in Philly. You know, you listen to the classic rock, and here we go. Jeff Sessions is coming back.
There you go. It's like having a racist running for a Senate seat in Alabama. Feels like old times.
and if Trump is going to try to occupy his time, rat fucking Sessions,
yeah,
versus like doing anything else, I am 100%. Okay for that.
Yeah, no, and I think that, you know, there's
it'll be very entertaining.
It'll be entertaining, and I, you know, and there was some commentators I was listening to. I think it was on the Chris's Hayes show last night, where basically we're saying this should be a lockup win for Republicans, right, this year. And Sessions is pretty popular in Alabama still, despite all his blah blah. But if there's one thing that could screw up that I'm getting that seat back, it's Trump. And Trump is actually, you know, he's planning for a rally down in Alabama at the Crimson Tide Stadium, right? University of
Alabama.
He's
going to be riding on Roy Moore's horse.
I would love to see that with Roy Moore.
Who's the horse?
What's that? Ooh. Oh, so which one? I don't know. They're both. Yeah, I'm not going to go down the road. I'm just going to shut my mouth on that one. But that's. Trump's going to go down there and he's going to actively campaign against Sessions, right? Which is going to cause a little turmoil in the Republican primary because it's Roy Moore is back in, isn't he?
I think so.
Yeah, I think he's back in. There's a couple other candidates too as well. So Trump's going to do his best to completely turn that primary into chaos, which just may kind of end up having a positive impact for what's his name? Doug Brown's your friend out there.
So, you know, one quick thing before we move on.
Yeah.
Where are the odds that Virginia Democrats legalize public sector unions and repeal right to work?
I think pretty damn good.
I mean, there's pretty much no defense of supporting right to work if you're a Democrat. No. So it'll be interesting if to see if that goes through. That, at the very least, has to go through the legislature.
Yeah.
The assembly in Virginia.
Yep.
Like, repealing right to work.
Yep.
I mean, we'll see how that goes. I mean, you do that, you're opening up the floodgates of keeping Virginia blue for a while. So.
Yep. My guess, given kind of past performance by the Democrats, my guess is that we're probably not going to see that kind of movement until after 2020. But
Oh no, I think you do it before 2020 and make it a campaign issue.
Oh, I think you should, but we shall see.
I mean, you make that a statewide campaign issue.
Yep,
bringing unions back into the state. I mean, union support for unions in general are at an all-time high. You know, I don't see Republicans, like, the amount of money the Republicans would dump into that will be amazing. And the rhetoric, it's so easy to beat their rhetoric.
That's true.
I mean, yeah.
I'd like to see it. I want to get on the hopeful train here and say that that's what they're going to do in Virginia. Because I agree with you, absolutely. I mean, that's what should happen, right? You make it a central campaign.
I mean, this should be
issue.
Like a day one issue. Yeah, fucking A, first day of totally. Session, press conference. We're here. We're back. We have majorities. We're repealing right to work.
Yep.
And we're becoming a union-friendly state.
Boom.
You want to see some heads fucking explode?
Yep.
Yeah, so.
Yep. Very cool. So I got to ask you, so what do you make of the Ayanna Pressley's endorsement of Elizabeth Warren for president? That's gotten a lot of, like, kind of shit throwing on Twitter and social media.
I have not engaged in that whatsoever. Uh-huh. I've pretty much sat on the sidelines. I mean, like, it is actually pretty amazing watching the hot takes and shit posts that are coming from the Sanders people on this.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I actually do think that, like, if there's one thing that's going to undermine Sanders, it is the constant shit posting and bickering, needless bickering, and driving a wedge into a community that doesn't need to have a wedge driven into it. Like, you know what I mean? Yes.
Yep.
Like, Sanders is a different type of brand of progressive. You know, he's a socialist and he's an anti-capitalist. And yeah, like, I'm an anti-capitalist and that's how I align myself. But, like, I think it's pretty damn good having someone like Elizabeth Warren also in the race, who is just on the other boundary of the other side of that fence of being an anti-capitalist.
Look, I mean
she's a very weak pro-capitalist. Like, you know what I mean?
But look, I'd be like she's the, you know, again, you see these comparisons, they talk about, you know, Debs versus Brandeis, right? I mean, as kind of the two models of kind of like progressivism, right? You got the Debs, you've got the kind of the socialist tradition, democratic socialist tradition, and you got the Brandeis, you've got the kind of like the kind of regulatory kind of like, you know, democratic small d democracy, anti-corporate guy like Brandeis. So you've got, you know, I mean, that's the two areas of the Progressive Party. And for me, it's like, I agree with you about, you know, that's the one thing that could undermine Sanders. And I my concern has always been about, like, you know, you don't want to undermine the amazing work that has been going on, like, for the past several years. Right.
Like, and I don't mean undermine Sanders, but I also think it could be like detrimental to the movement in general.
That's my concern. Right?
Yeah. Like, I mean, like, it's people who. It's also a faction of people who are never involved in party politics versus people who are not getting involved in party politics. But also, I mean, yeah, it's it's definitely interesting. To say the least. I mean, it's also interesting seeing the weak ass attacks coming from the Biden people saying that, like, you're seeing it with Sanders. Well, he's not a Democrat.
Yeah.
And now,
that's gonna work. He's so not a Democrat.
Now you have Now you have, like, fucking DC people going, well, Warren wasn't a Democrat, and Joe Biden's been a Democrat for the past 50 years.
Yeah,
while Elizabeth Warren was a Republican, Joe Biden was doing X, Y, and Z for the party.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, say, you want to know who's a real Democrat? Nancy Pelosi, right? And she doesn't believe in Medicare for all. That's a Democrat, right? That's not going to fly. That is not going to – nobody gives a shit. I mean, anybody who matters in this election, right?
I mean, and I saw this,
not,
like, I'm
– that someone – nobody gives a shit about the, like – the.
And,
like,
this came from, like, one of my DC consultant friends on Facebook.
Oh, my God.
And I just, like, laughed in response. Like, you've got to be – this is your weak-ass attack against, like, Warren now. Oh, she wasn't a Democrat. Well, Joe Biden's been a Democrat his whole life.
Yeah, it's like, you know, look, Bernie, like what Bernie did on the last debate stage is the perfect response to that. You know, when Joe's like, I was getting things done. So, yeah, you know what you got done? You got the Iraq war done. The most devastating war in American history. You got that done, right? You got the bankruptcy bill done, which is kind of like killing families like across the country for
you
decades.
You got busing. You killed busing.
You got the crime bill done, right? I mean, come on. I mean, what does that mean?
The Hyde Amendment done.
Exactly. Right. I mean, OK, so you're telling me that that's the Democratic Party. I said, why don't you just kind of like help the demise of the Democratic Party by staying on that messaging? Why don't you just go ahead and do that? Right. That's why it's fucking dry. It's unbelievable seeing Pelosi come out and kind of being this anti-Medicare for all stuff and saying, you know, going backward. People have had experience. You know this. You live it. Right. It's like the experience of what it has meant and the kind of what is meant to get, quote unquote, health care under Obamacare. Right.
Yeah,
and
it fucking sucks.
It sucks.
it's too expensive. You can't afford it. And it, like, you gotta jump through fucking hoops to get something you're not using.
It's like
I pay hundreds of dollars a month for it, and you're not gonna use it.
I mean, that's just crazy, right? That is just crazy. And the thing is, like, look, we can go through all. Here's the thing, right? And then you talk to those Democrats, which try to kind of like justify. No, we just have to go back and fix Obamacare, and we gotta do this little blah 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 blah. Right?
Obamacare is about to get like. About to be ruled unconstitutional.
Exactly.
In front of the Supreme Court.
Exactly.
Like,
right?
Obamacare
exactly.
is gone.
Exactly.
Obamacare
exactly.
is done for all week. No, like, Obamacare is done. And you know what's, like, amazing? Like, my mom, who is 60-some, who's in her 60s, union member, you know, works with SEIU in Philadelphia, who is pretty apolitical but votes every year in every primary and stuff like that. She said, like, the healthcare system in this country is fucked up.
Yes.
She's like, when I was your age and we had coverage, like, everything was covered without question.
Yep.
Like 30 years ago. And she's like, it's astounding seeing what the healthcare is at now.
Yep.
When, like, there was a time in my parents' lifetime when shit was covered because we had union jobs in this country. We had a high density of union jobs. Like 30% of the country was in a union, and that provided benefits for everyone else. Like, I guarantee you, if we still had that union density, we would actually have a sane fucking healthcare system.
Oh, absolutely.
A much saner healthcare system than we have now.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Like, no.
I mean, that's it. And you listen to the some of the defenses of, like, the, you know, people who are anti-Medicare for all and want to kind of fix Obamacare. What they immediately have to start doing is get into these, like, these, you know, deep technical discussions about specificities of the law. And you're like, you know, people are just like, I don't want to have to do that. I want to be able to just go to my doctor instead of having to understand the ins and outs of logging onto the system during a window of time in order to choose my... No, I just want to go to the doctor and I want to get better, right? And I want to stay healthy to begin with. This is just so crazy, but... But anyways, one point I wanted to make about, you know, again, about the Ayanna Pressley coming out endorsing Elizabeth Warren is, like, and what I mean by, say, you know, this is about progressives, like, deepening their roots in the Democratic Party, is that for me, the fact that you've got two candidates who are basically kind of like in that top tier, right? Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren shows you the depth by which the progressive movement is kind of making inroads and reshaping the Democratic Party. And the fact is, if the debate within the Democratic Party now becomes Brandeis versus Debs, as opposed to, like, you know, like
Clinton versus
like Romney
or right? Kerry,
right?
Or Al Gore.
You see how enormous that is, right? And the important thing about like a democratic process, small d democratic process, right, is that, you know, if you think about, we've talked about the Overton window in terms of, like, what do you see as politically possible at any particular time, right? But it's also what that window is. It also determines kind of what are the reasonable debates, right, and within which you have disagreements, but you maintain, right, the frame around that. And this is where I think the, you know, the move to kind of, like, dig into heels, especially at this point in the campaign, dig into heels and and start to, like, you know, this is what Michael Brooks has been driving me crazy about. I can't listen to him, like, on the Majority Report some days, because he starts off the show, when he's leading the show on the Majority Report, he starts it off with, like, you know, it's the pro-con and, like, Bernie Warren thing. And I talk about why Elizabeth Warren's all this stuff. And wants to kind of bring up dirt on Warren. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't have a kind of rich debate on it. But the fact that it's so, like, laser-focused on showing why Elizabeth Warren
is not...
We're
having, like, meta-debates.
No, exactly.
Like, when I'm on, like...
I'm like...
Like we're having debates that, like, I don't think should be, I'm not going to say, like, aired out publicly. Like, these are debates we have in person, like, yelling at each other, like, in a conference hall. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, I don't know. It's like, almost like, keep your shit, like, in-house, too, like, with this stuff, especially with the sniping and all. Like,
Well, I look at it like this, right? It's like, if you look at the way that if you take the lead from Bernie and from Warren, right? They're not doing that to each other.
No, it's like that dirtbag left Twitter.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it's like, and it really is damaging. And it's this kind of like this combination of ideological purity to kind of like, I know you are, but what am I kind of crap. Like, I mean, it's like some of it's just really childish. Some of the stuff is just like, you know, it's all about this ideological.
It's almost like a hyper-masculine dick measuring contest.
Well, yeah, there you go. Okay, you said it better than I did. I think that's really what it is, right? So, but, you know, I look at it like this. I'm going to actively, you know, you get Bernie and you get Warren, right? I'm almost agnostic at which one we get, right, at this point. I'm going to campaign my heart out for either one of them, right?
Oh, yeah, same here. I mean, like, and I feel like they realize that, too. And you see it by the way they're interacting with each other.
No, exactly, because, look, the folks who are backing Bernie, right? I mean, look, I supported Bernie like nobody's business, right, during last election, right? And to see that the both of them are in this election now has got me so full of joy I can't even tell you.
And you know what, like, I was going to say the best thing about this, like, fight happening with the Sanders and supporters, like... Like, people don't realize, like, it was the Sanders employees now who launched the Ready for Warren campaign in 2015.
That's right.
To get Liz Warren to run for office.
That's right.
And she said no. And then they got, then they pushed Sanders to run, and Sanders ran.
Yep, that's right. I mean, it's like, I mean, we were there, right? We were there in Harrisburg when Bernie Sanders was still kind of getting, you know, like testing the waters before he announced his campaign. He came out to Harrisburg, right? Part of the Keystone Progress Summit, right? And the crowd was like just unbelievable, right? And you had a lot of people in that room where, yeah, they're ready for Warren people because they were still kind of drafting Warren. But Bernie, man, you know, he saw what was out there, and people were like, hey, this is pretty awesome. The crowd was going crazy. He's got progressives behind him. This is where we're at, right? I mean, this has been we're at where we are today because of kind of the Bernie movement, right? And the thing is that the last thing we want to do is like to move. Let's say Bernie wins, right? I don't want anyone who's supporting Elizabeth Warren to now be kind of be on the outside and kind of being that's our coalition. Right. So, I mean, we got to go hard against Buttigieg. We got to go hard against Biden. We got to go hard against these, you know, these freaking neoliberal leftovers. Right. And then we got to kind of like push for these candidates, and they're going to work out. And you look, you support Warren, you support Sanders. Yeah, have at it. Right. But think about it going forward, make articulating the vision. Right. And that the campaign is going to determine it. Right. The sniping is not going to help. Right. It's going to be the positive vision that is going to bring people out. So anyways. I want to say one last thing before we two quick things on impeachment, because, I mean, obviously this week has also been dominated by impeachment news, and the transcripts now have been released, which has basically taken away every single Republican talking point whatsoever. As those come out, they're even more damning than the original leaks. And now we're going to get public hearings beginning next Wednesday. And they have a pretty, a pretty quick schedule that they want to kind of have the hearings, like, over a couple weeks. They want to draft up the articles of impeachment, and they want to have a vote on impeachment before Christmas. At least that's the plan at this point, which is pretty amazing. So do check that out. It will be a great Christmas present, I have to say.
What are your thoughts on this? I mean, like, I feel like So, like, I felt like the overreaction. I felt like there was a bit of an overreaction to Pelosi holding the formal first vote to get things going. Like, I mean, yeah, you gave the Republicans what they want, but I mean, to me, that was a signaling we're going ahead with this now. Like, this is going to become this. We are moving towards the public phase of this, and we're going to have the vote and kick this off.
Yeah.
I think that it was remarkable that only two Democrats broke.
Yep.
On that. I think she should be praised for that. I mean, for all the shit she does, it's irritating.
Yep.
She does have her caucus in line on this, which is good. Like, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Which is reassuring. And no, I mean, it's, yeah, it's popcorn time.
No, it is. Look,
I mean, this is going to be. I don't know. I don't like, this is going to be ridiculously bad beyond belief.
Yeah.
Like, bad in a bad way. Like, this is going to be serious. It's going to be bad watching this stuff come out. Trump is pretty much signaling he wants to burn the whole entire thing down to the ground.
Yep.
And, like, it's going to be fun to see who's going to go to jail out of this. I mean,
yeah.
Rudy's.
I'm going
Rudy's
for Rudy. You got to put chips on Rudy for that one.
I think
I'll take
Sondland,
Rudy for 100.
It seems like Sondland had an epiphany.
Yeah, he's going to jail, right? That was it. He's like, he's sitting there and he's going like,
"That's a felony, also."
He's like, you know,
go play with your spidget finner.
That's what he said to Trump. He's like, "I'm done."
He's like, I mean, people are also hitting the point. Do I want to spend the rest of my life in jail for this fucking idiot?
Yeah.
I mean, like, you had to know this was going to be an issue when she signed on for the job.
Well, you know, it's like the difference is, well, but the thing is like, look, most of those people that are in those positions, right, that Trump in those positions, they live in a world that is untouched by the law, right? They're used to just saying shit, whatever the fuck that they want and doing whatever the hell that they want and think that everything's going to be hunky-dory. And suddenly, like, he's like, starts picturing himself, like, in a perp walk, and he's like, oh, wait a minute.
That is. Hey, look, there's Roger Stone, there's Manafort, there's God. Rudy. Like,
wait! Oh, I forgot to put this in. Did you hear what the judge instructed the jurors for Roger Stone's?
What?
Do not go home and rent The Godfather. You are not allowed to watch The Godfather because in the opening remarks there were so many references to The Godfather that the judge instructed the jurors, do not go and watch them because you might prejudice the jury. It's freaking hilarious. It's awesome.
This is almost like, I don't know if like there's ever been a show about, like, I mean, there has to be a sitcom made if it was about like a really incompetent mobster crew.
Oh,
like
gosh.
Most like mobster movies are like serious and like killing people. Like, this is just like an incompetent like crew of fucking idiots.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. There's what the hell is this? What was this called? There is this show. It's called on Netflix. It's called let's see, Nordic shows on Netflix. I can see if I could. It's called The Norseman. Have you heard of this thing?
No.
All right. Well, there's that show. I know this is totally a diversion, but you know that show, The Vikings. You know that one.
Was it on like History Channel?
No, it's I think it's on Netflix too as well, but it's like, you know, it's a dramatization of kind of the Vikings and things like this, but it's kind of like, you know, like a serious thing, and it's like a, you know, blah blah blah. Well, The Norseman is kind of like, it's in a similar vein, except they're all freaking like bumbling idiots, you know, a whole bunch of them, things like that. It's like there's got to be a version of this done of like of the Trump administration or something like that afterwards, definitely. But So we shall see. I mean, it's going to be crazy. It's going to be nuts. Just get out your popcorn and plan ahead, everybody, because it's going to be quite a ride. And you know, and again, and like, you know, keep your doors locked too, because this could go really bad. Like, I don't mean to laugh about it, but I'm serious. It's like, it's both scary and like thrilling and like, oh my God, what the hell is going on?
I may legitimately be day drinking during the hearings.
Oh man, well, I have to work, so hopefully I'm gonna be able to catch some of them Believe me, I thought about taking a personal day, right, just to be able to watch this stuff. But I got to work. It's getting too close to the end of the semester. All right, cool. Anything else on a national scale?
Nothing really.
All right. Well, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. I want to remind you that you become a member of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and become a member today. We'll be right back after this.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1892. That was the day that black and white workers in New Orleans began what is considered the first integrated general strike in United States history. The strike began when the New Orleans Board of Trade refused to enter into an agreement with the Teamsters Union because it included black members. The Teamsters were part of what was known as the Triple Alliance. The other two groups in the alliance were the Scalesmen and the Packers unions. The Board of Trade had settled contracts with those two, mostly white unions. The refusal to bargain with the Teamsters set a wave of anger through the New Orleans labor movement. Labor was on the march in New Orleans in 1892. That May, streetcar workers had won union recognition after a successful strike. The American Federation of Labor had spent the year organizing throughout the city. One emphasis of the organizing drive was interracial labor cooperation. Workers were ready to let their voices be heard. The general strike was called and grew to include between 20 and 25,000 workers. Trade unions, musicians, and shoe clerks joined the strike. Even some of the unions that had already won contracts, including the streetcar workers, walked off the job in solidarity. The central demand was union recognition. The mayor of New Orleans refused to deploy his police force to stop the strikers, but the governor threatened armed intervention. Faced with that threat, the strike ended on November 11th. The workers gained some wage increases, but did not win union recognition. And in retribution for their solidarity, the streetcar workers lost the contract they had won earlier that year. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. And we got another PA focus today, and it was a huge election week in Pennsylvania. What do you say, man?
Yeah, a bit.
A bit.
No, I mean, like, where do we want to start? I guess, like, with the Working Families Party.
Yeah, that's a cool place to start.
There's this saga that's been going on in Philadelphia for the past several months with the Working Families Party targeting the minority seats on the Philadelphia City Council for the at-large races. These were typically Republican seats, and Kendra Books beat one, a minority spot for City Hall. And this campaign was pissing off a lot of party people in Philadelphia.
Party people meaning Democratic Party people.
Yeah, a lot of Democrats, mm-hmm. Because they were, A, endorsing against the party and asking them to endorse these non-Democrats in the Working Families Party, which is like a no-no in the bylaws of the Democratic Party. And it smashes their machine.
Right.
I mean, like, these aren't city council spots that are given away to people. I mean, they are.
They were, right? I mean, basically.
They were given away to Republicans. And typically these Republicans were either in some sort of establishment position, either like with or a machine position with any of the building trades in the city of Philadelphia or the business community.
Right.
And who was also close with the party, the Democratic Party establishment.
Right, and let's be clear.
And this smashes that cabal.
Right, and
that's been going on for these minority seats for a while.
Right, and let's be clear that those two minority seats are like reserved for a party who could never ever win an election outright, because you have a 7-to-1 like Democratic Party like registration in the city.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
So,
and
so,
people were worried that like three Republicans were going to win. Because of these, and it was just mathematically impossible and you just tell it to these people, that's mathematically impossible, they lose their fucking shit.
Right. So Kendra Brooks, we should say, so Kendra Brooks, who ran on the Working Families Party, I mean, she's got a story, right? I mean, she's lived in Philly for about 40 years.
She lives in her childhood home.
Yep. Well, she got evicted from it,
and
right?
was foreclosed on right. and is now renting out from the bank.
Right.
Like, and this is who the Democratic machine was trying to keep off the ballot.
Right. And let's look at, she's an African-American woman, right? She worked with special needs kids, and then she worked in that job until Tom Corbett basically slashed funding for public education and special education. So she was laid off. Right. At her job working for special needs kids in Philadelphia. Right. And that's when she ran into the issue with the house. Right. The house gets foreclosed upon. Right. And then. Right. She's still working at that point. And then they try to privatize her neighborhood school. Right. And that's when she was like, that's it. I'm done. Right. And she got involved and helped organize the fight to save that school. Right. So that's her. That's a little condensed history of what she did. Now, the thing was, is when she was campaigning for on the Workers' Families Party, Working Families Party. Right. She was, I mean, there's multiple videos. You can watch her kind of at campaign rallies telling people, right, this is not against the Democratic Party. This is the Working Families Party. The party for working families is a minority party in Philadelphia. No more Republicans. Let's bring in working families. Right. That was the argument. And so the Democratic Party is losing its shit because now it has to argue with the left.
Right? And this is so I have this hot take from the Philadelphia Inquirer on Kendra Brooks. Right. It's exactly what you said. This is from a ward leader. They won one thing against a minority party. They didn't beat us. They beat the Republicans, not the Democrats. Just remember that.
That's exactly. And in her campaign, she said specifically, she goes, vote Kendra Brooks first and then any Democrats that you want, right? She's basically was making that case, right? She was promoting voting for Democrats. She said, vote for the Working Families Party and then vote for the Democrats. We get the Republicans out.
But no, like this breaks. And the reason why this is important, like say if a close issue comes up and you have those two Republican votes and you know that they're going to break with the establishment.
Right.
You know, like a tiebreaker vote, like any like close votes, her vote becomes that much more important.
Exactly.
In city council.
Exactly.
And that's what they're upset about.
Yeah, it's crazy. And it's like, you know, and like, look, that machine has got to be shaken
in
its boots
in
right now.
Death. It's in its death pangs, pretty much. I mean, it's you think about like, look who is building up their machine. I mean, everything is trending towards Helen Gim.
Helen Gim, right? I mean, Helen Gim came out, was an active supporter and endorsed Kendra Brooks.
And Helen Gim's another person who I met before she was a city councilwoman. She spent a decade fighting the privatization of public schools in Philadelphia. She spent at least 15 years fighting that before she even got involved in city council politics. And she's on the fast track becoming the next mayor of Philadelphia.
Yep, exactly. Right.
She's built one of the most progressive machines out there.
Yep.
It's you know, this Kendra Brooks victory is also not a singular moment in Philadelphia. What's been happening? This is a years long line of victories that has been happening to get to this point. And this is just another victory along the way.
Well, and if you put this in some context too, as well, like if you think about what you mean by machines, just to kind of give two examples for people, is you remember this is the same period of time as Helen Gim was kind of building up what you're saying, your machine. Part of what that machine looks like is you remember that like the Philly Student Union. Right. So the kind of like high school, public school students in Philadelphia who were kind of like went on strike. Right. And demanding kind of resources for public schools. Right. And that is now that movement is connected with Helen Gim because Helen Gim was out there with those students.
The like, Occupy movement. These are the same people from the Occupy.
Exactly. Right. And if you look at the PA student power movement right now. Right. The PA student power movement right now. Right. What they're doing in Philadelphia is unbelievable. Right. Sorry. Yeah. I mean to cut you off.
Oh, no. I mean, like these movements are dated. These people involved with these movements, you know, back to Occupy Philly, back to the education cuts and fighting the school closures. Like this is years of organizing. And that has culminated in Philadelphia becoming a very more progressive city, period. You have fair work week legislation. You have paid sick days. You have a workers' bill of rights. You have protection for workers going to marginalized communities within the city. You have this stuff that's happening in Philadelphia, and like the organizing that got that stuff done got Kendra Brooks elected and is going to drag the city to the left.
Yeah, and got Larry Krasner elected too as well, yeah. Right? I mean,
like I feel like they see what's coming, they know what's coming, and they're pissed.
Yes. Well, and you got to give a huge
and it's not the old white guys club.
Right. And I think you're absolutely right by putting Helen Gim right out there in front because I mean she just like so. And I think what Helen Gim did for a lot of people too as well is that it was like saying, "Look, we can win, right? We can win and we can build." And because you saw like after that, you saw one after the other. I mean, it was so much. The movements got built up, candidates emerged out of the movements, and then we saw that we can win. And that is just snowballing right now.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
I know, like some of these events too are one of my most favorite like protests ever. With the education movement, we chased Corbett out. We literally chased Corbett away from in the final weeks of his tenure. He never went to a Philadelphia public school, and so he picked Central High School like the week before Thanksgiving to go to, or back in December, and got chased away.
That's awesome.
We made sure he never stepped foot inside a public school, and if he went inside that school. There were at least 1,000 students ready to just like rain on his fucking day.
Yep.
There was that. There we did an action outside of the Union League in Philadelphia where we laid down a red carpet.
I remember that. Yeah, I remember that.
I mean, no, but like this is where these victories came from. Like this is those were the movements where these people came from.
Awesome, man.
And now they're winning and we're all getting in positions of power. And no, it's fun.
No, exactly. And it's like we say, this was not just Philadelphia too, as well as we saw like historic shifts. Now this has been happening again. This has been, you know, slowly building over years, but this, we saw, I mean, a decisive shift, you know, kind of like say the ring counties, Delaware County and Chester County, huge victories there, huge victories in Bucks County and Lehigh County. Right. I mean, it's like, you know, we've been talking about this for a long time, right? We've been talking about this, the shift that's happening in the suburbs. And you've always heard, you know, what I've always said is about, you know, the Lehigh Valley is the future of Pennsylvania. And that's the future where organizing needs to take place. See that shift there.
Reading got its first Latino mayor ever.
Yeah, Scranton, first woman mayor ever.
Jess Rothschild got elected to the city council in Wilkes-Barre.
I mean, that's
yeah,
it's incredible. And I think it's really important to look at. I don't know if you caught Mike from PA was on called in the Majority Report the other day. He did a fantastic breakdown of kind of what happened, kind of like all up the kind of eastern side of the state in particular. Not only that, but I mean, that was really decisive there. And I think that the one, what was his name? Pinsley was it?
Yeah.
Right. Who ran almost beat Pat Brown. Right. Kind of coming out of nowhere. And now he's kind of like, he's in office now. Right.
What did he get?
He got it's a city council, I think.
Pretty okay.
City council. but I mean, he's like, I mean, this you've got huge shift. And, you know, it's interesting seeing some of the people on that moved from school board, for example, that were on the Allentown City School Board. And now are kind of on city council, right? That were, again, connected to movements. You see this kind of slow-moving bubbling up. And I didn't put this in the notes. I can't believe I didn't put this in the notes. But just a couple – 2 days ago, I believe it was 2 days ago, the Bethlehem City Council voted unanimously in support of a resolution in favor of Medicare for All, right, which was – kudos to the organizers, to the labor organizers, for the community-based organizers who have been moving around this and pushing this resolution, right? So you're seeing this happen, like, right before our eyes as a result of this organizing. So, I mean, it's incredible to see this happen.
Yeah, and you also look at it, I mean, like, I think this also plays the importance, a couple of things. The importance of having established left groups in an area, like established left organizations, like the DSA, like unions. You know, Democrats don't win unless there is an established left.
Yep.
And that's pretty much how it's been in any country. Like, you don't have an established – you don't win unless you have an established left and you have an established labor sector. And, you know, we're seeing that happening up there. But also what's important this, I'm in my opinion, plays well for the Pennsylvania Dems possibly flipping the House and making it easier to flip the Senate next year and have our own trifecta. You know, the victories that happened in Delaware, Chester, Bucks, Lehigh, and Monroe counties now gives control of the elections to Democrats.
Yep.
So now Republicans won't be able to fuck around with their voter suppression tactics by not having polling places opening on time, by switching polling locations at the last minute, by doing what we had a couple years ago, Kutztown, you know, having a polling place leave Kutztown University and go to a small church that's inaccessible for a whole entire community. Like, that shit stops in those counties now.
Right. That's right.
Like, there's going to be, you know, polling places that Lincoln University is not going to be fucked with. Like, these are important. That stuff there is important because it's going to make getting those House seats easier to flip.
Yep.
And we need about 10 of them. Eugene DeGirolamo or Gene DeGirolamo got elected to the Bucks County Commissioner's office. He will be leaving. That's going to be a pickup. Once we have that special election next year. So
it's exciting. I have to say it's exciting.
I mean, like, I, you know, the talk is always Pennsylvania. It's 2022 for Democrats, you know, like the victories they had last year were not, I don't think they were expecting to have the victories that they had last year on the campaign side. And now the expectations have been pushed up that much more. And now we control important counties for important races that we need to flip these seats.
Yep.
So.
Well, it's something. It's the power of organizing. It is the power of organizing, and it's the slow movement building that brings the power. That's where power comes from. You know, and other thing about election day before I kind of give my little spiel on kind of the contract. Sean,
what's that?
Anything else on the election or things like that in Pennsylvania that you want to kind of bring forward?
Not really. Yeah, no.
All right. Well, let me just say this. I'm not gonna go into this in too much right now. But given our just conversation right now, I just want to put it in context of the conversation about the building of power. Through movements that we've seen in our state and is happening now around the country. I mean, thanks to a kind of like waking up for those folks, especially on the left, to not only to looking at national politics, but understanding the kind of the crucial role in kind of like local and regional politics, right? And that's what we saw. So by contrast, however, this is one thing that's got me concerned. And, you know, I haven't been too... I'm not gonna say that right now. So finally, there is a tentative agreement between ABSCOF and the State Systems of Higher Education that faculty are going to be asked to vote on next week. It has been approved by obviously the negotiations committee of ABSCOF. It's been approved by the Legislative Assembly of ABSCOF to send to the membership for a vote. Now we're at the point of having that vote. And what's been pretty remarkable for me is to watching in slow motion the air getting taken out of the power that was built through ABSCOF strike in 2016. And that was done largely through with this new chancellor came in. You know, he's the, you know, I call him Chancellor McDreamy because he's got, you know, he's got the nice hair. He's from the kind of Seattle area. He worked for Bill Gates's Microsoft, you know, or Bill Gates's higher education stuff. You know, the people that look to charterize everything are looking to do the same thing in higher education. That guy. Well, he's coming here, you know, took over this school. And, you know, my belief is that, he's coming to Pennsylvania, and he came to Pennsylvania, and he's actually admitted this. He said this kind of outright, is to really where he sees he can have this kind of like transformative effect and really kind of shape an entire system, right? It's a complete top-down way of thinking about reshaping the system. Yeah, sure, you're going to have little customer surveys that you're going to kind of ask people for input, but ultimately he's driving that kind of reshaping. And I would be surprised if he doesn't come out of this with a book that will be a bestseller in circles of college, university administrators, and public schools about how to accomplish this process. Whether or not our union president will be a co-author on that book, we'll see. But when they embraced and our faculty union embraced this interest-based bargaining. That was a concern of mine from the get-go, because what interest-based bargaining does, I mean, we got to understand, ABSCA for a long time had been operated from this kind of like closed doors, smoky room kind of dealing behind the scenes, where the leader of the union and the leader of the state system go behind closed doors and they come out with a deal. That was the story that I came in with, that was falling apart when I came to this the system. And there was a lot of us who worked extraordinarily hard to increase the level of transparency in our union. For example, allowing members to have access to our books, right, so we can see where money is being spent, to completely reshaping our negotiations committees so there were degrees of accountability, right, and kind of more transparency for members. So it was kind of involving members more. And 2016, when we went out on strike, right, in many ways, the way I felt about that, at least, that was kind of a culmination of a process. That was that next logical step. Okay, we've built those infrastructure. We've organized around kind of reshaping and kind of updating the way that we do business as a union. And now we're going to exercise that power, and we did it incredibly effectively. We had a three-day strike, and we beat back like these horrific attempts to gut our union and to fundamentally change the state system of higher education. So we did that. And now in a movement building model, right, in a kind of social unionism model, the kind of model we see happening politically all across the country right now, you take those gains, right, and you build on them, right, that you invest in organizing, invest in kind of membership involvement, and that's there. And our union, from my humble opinion, went in the opposite direction. Began to close back in, and it was kind of almost the strike was a demonstration of power so that we can kind of like get back to the way things used to be, right, where the leadership handles the stuff and membership shows up kind of like periodically, right? And I'm overstating the case to make a point. Okay, now I haven't been as vocal on this in the ways that maybe I should have been, right? In part because I was not directly involved in the leadership of our union for the past couple of years, right? Which I have been, which I had been before. I've got burnout, to be perfectly frank, got burnout on a bunch of just kind of nonsense, kind of internal fighting garbage that has nothing to do with the broader picture. But I just got sick and tired of dealing with people who just can't get it through their freaking heads that their own worst enemies. So I just I needed a little break, right? And so I haven't been as active as kind of talking about what's going on with this contract. So we've got the contract, a tentative contract, and frankly, this was supposed to be this big thing about collaboration. We're going to work together. We're going to do all this other kind of stuff. And when I'm looking at the details of the contract, right, you know, I think it's fair for any member of ABSCOF to look at the details of the contract and say, okay, so why was this more advantageous? Right. What is the value of this interest-based bargaining process? Right. One of the biggest giveaways in my mind was on governance. It's in the preamble of the agreement, right, that you're basically opening up to other groups for governance. Right. So ABSCOF seems to be, in my willingly handing over some of its own power. Right. And that its members built. And that's concerning to me. So I look kind of moving forward. And again, I'm, you know, again, moving back in again to see where we go from here. And it's concerning to me that there seems to, you know, be that kind of old school labor model that's creeped back in to our own faculty union, the one that we've worked so hard kind of against. So, you know, here we go. You know, I guess the cycle begins again, the cycle of struggle. And I think 2020 is going to provide a really good launching point for us to, you know, tie that up. But so we shall see. The one thing I'll mention real briefly here again, I mentioned at the onset, was that, you know, we've got a right to know request out, and we're hoping to get the results of that anytime soon. They had to send it certified mail and a thumb drive because apparently there was so much material about what happened with the Legionella testing at Kutztown University, who was informed, what kind of procedures were followed, and a bunch of that kind of stuff. But I'm going to hold off on getting into that before because I want to actually look at some of the documents so I could bring some of those to you in the podcast. I might even do a special section on it, which I'm going to review some of the stuff and kind of walk through some of what we're finding. But we'll cross that bridge when we get there. So anything else for the good of the order for our little PA focus, Sean?
Nothing too much. I got my own right to know request out there that I'm waiting on. So
there you go. Right to know requests are fun. But by the way, everybody, right? You don't need to be some kind of special person to do right to know requests. I think that's a skill that we should all learn. I'd be happy if people want to see what it looks like. I'd be happy to show you examples. I'll send you copies of right to know requests that I've made. I know for me, when I was filing the first right to know request ever, it was really intimidating because I got myself in the head. Like, if I don't do this right, there's going to be all this other problems. But, you know, after a while, it's actually realized that, oh, no, it's pretty straightforward. It's not some sort of special knowledge that you need. So, you know, I'd be happy to kind of share my samples with you. All right, everybody, so we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to do this week's Last Call. That's right, Space News and Beer! Woo! This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull-no-punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. It's our last call. We talk space news. We talk beer. Whatever else we feel like talking about. The stuff that doesn't fit anywhere else, and we just chat away. Got a bunch of space news that I talked through at the top of the introduction today. The big news is that we're getting very close. Last time we were on the air on the 18th. Talked a little bit about the Artemis Project. The Artemis Project is basically NASA's move to kind of get humans back to the moon. If you remember that, if you do not, just go back in our archives and check it out from 2 weeks ago. And that's actually moving things pretty fast, right? It's causing kind of reverberations throughout the kind of space industry. So now you've got, for example, SpaceX has kind of ramped up its production schedule for its new Starship. It's this gigantic stainless steel ship. And Elon Musk is making claims. Again, you take everything Elon Musk says with a grain of salt, but that they're going to be able to kind of use this. It's going to be about $2 million per launch, which is significantly below what even kind of small rockets normally cost. So that testing has been increased. They've got they're building two of them simultaneously for testing, one in Florida and one in Houston, Texas or California, I'm not sure. But that's it. Boeing has now basically realized that, okay, it can't just keep on sucking on the teat of the government space program by claiming that it's going to have its space launch system already and just keep on that money coming. No, they're actually going to have to produce some tangible results. So now they presented NASA with a plan for this simplified human lander system, which is basically going to work with the SLS, the space launch system, to bring humans to the moon, begin delivering payloads. And that's going to be happening soon. So what's fascinating about this stuff for me is that the time scale or the time frame has moved way up, right? So you're talking about potentially as early as 2021, right? Some folks say 2020, but 2021, where there'll actually be payloads that will start to be delivered to the moon for permanent settlements. This is happening at the same time, or permanent bases, but this is happening at the same time that China is kind of like ramping up its kind of space race for to get to the moon too as well. So I'm looking at this and look, I take a step back from this for a minute and it's like, it just blows my mind to think that this is the world that my kids are growing up in, that this is actually going to be like, They're going to watch people go back to the moon. The first woman ever is going to be stepping on the moon, right, in their lifetime, and it's going to happen quickly. Now, there could be all sorts of issues with that, which you've heard me talk about space capitalism and galactic capitalists. This is where we're going. But these are two developments that have took place. The other one I would notice this week is that there's an organization called the Gateway Foundation, and they're kind of doing this hard push for the first ever space hotel, which is, you know, it looks exactly like you'd expect it to be. You watch 2001 A Space Odyssey. It's basically a version of that, right? It's a version of that. I've been watching all the videos about this stuff, and they're making a fairly compelling case. The guy's a little PR-oriented. Yeah, a little bit. But you can see that the plans are moving into much more a concrete stage about actually how these you operational thing, how do you assemble something like this? It's just fascinating stuff to watch right now. So
I am like glad our aspirations are lying in space as the planet is literally burning on fire.
Well, that's the problem, right? I mean, that's the problem. Right. See, and the thing is, here's the thing, right? Well, and that's and this gets. If we had lots of time to talk about this, right? And I know that that this is our wrap up time as opposed to our let's get into this long conversation about this. But I do think that, you know, the way that say space exploration right now is being framed, it's like it's being as an alternative, right? As like this or that. It's this or that, either or. Right. And it doesn't need to be that way. Right. But that's essentially where it is, because essentially we've watched Trump and the Trump administration. Well, I mean, again, it's, you know, Obama didn't move very well on this either. But with the Trump administration is basically just gutting all environmental protections. And we're watching our kind of going into a cataclysmic dive to kind of catastrophic climate change. At the same time, we're ramping up kind of these prospects of going to the moon and establishing stuff. It's disorienting, to be honest with you. But I have that part of me, right, which is just like I think it's absolutely unbelievable, right, that's going on. It's like, you know, and again, NASA, like that kind of like development and that kind of research, that kind of science, right, has had reverberations like all throughout kind of like our cultures. And if you can imagine, if it was turned to the purposes of good, that'd be great. But that doesn't look at the direction it's going at this point, right? It looks like it's going to be mass amounts of kind of like extension of kind of neoliberal capitalism, right? And it's going to be an extension of the defense industry, right? We just saw this week Army Lieutenant General Robert Ashley, who's the director of the Defense Intelligence Agency, the DIA, basically went to this CyberSat 2019 conference in Virginia this past week. And that is like where it's like the only conference that basically, you know, works with like, you know, satellite, space, cyber and government to educate on threat vectors and deliver solutions against next generation attacks. Right. These are basically the people that are planning for war in space. Right. This guy goes up and he basically gives a strong pitch to the industry, the space industry, it kind of writ broadly, that China and Russia are developing these anti-satellite technologies to deny us access to kind of like our reconnaissance and all those other things, that we need to ramp up our militarization of space. So there you have it. I mean, the two wings of what brings us to oblivion, right? The defense industry and the kind of runaway capitalism is out in front. So we'll see. The good thing will be, though, Sean, is that at least we'll be able to watch it all happen from the space hotel.
Yes.
So anyways, that's my space news for the there was just a ton of stuff this week on space that I just went down all sorts of deep holes with, but and kind of more kind of immediate gratification purposes, Free Will has got a bunch of releases. I thought they were done with the mashes. As a matter of fact, 2 weeks ago I said that they were that I thought it was a closeout of their mashes, but lo and behold, here we go. They have a for tomorrow, that is Saturday the 9th, Free Will is releasing the Plum Cinnamon Mash, which is a sour ale brewed with plum puree, cinnamon, vanilla, and milk sugar. That comes in at about 7.5 ABV. And a sweet cherry apricot mash, sour ale brewed with sweet cherry puree, apricot puree, vanilla, and milk sugar, again at 7.5 ABV. I'm telling you, there was only one of their mashes that I didn't care for, and it was the mango mash. I just felt it just was too sweet for my tasting. Other people loved it, but you know, I just I'll have to say I had the last of the black currant mash that I talked about, black currant chocolate mash. Talked about this about a few weeks back, and they're so freaking good. So here you go again. We got two awesome releases. Free Will, this time of year, they always put together this special release. They call it Special Cookie. It's inspired by this European speculoos cookie. It's traditionally consumed as a holiday treat before St. Nicholas Day. So they put together this, you know, this beer based upon that. Is an imperial spice brown ale, and it's brewed with cardamom, brown sugar, cinnamon, ginger, and vanilla. You can kind of get that, you know, Christmas cookie kind of feeling there. And I have to say, it gets better every year. When I first had it, when they first released it years ago, I was kind of so-so on it. It keeps on getting better every year. And last year, it was something that I went out and got more that I liked it that much. This year, it is coming out. It was actually released on Wednesday. They had a special Wednesday release. There's still more of it that's available. And that comes in at a hefty 12.5 ABV. So that's you can share. Let's put it that way if you want. And if you're lucky, there still might be some of the special cookie, rum barrel aged special cookie that was bottled in the 750 milliliter bottles in 2018. And the brewer kind of basically, John, put it in his secret stash and decided to bring some of that stuff out during its when it gave its can release. I have no idea if there's anyone left. There's no limits on how many you can get. And they're there until they're gone. So, that's the Free Will news of the week. So, anything else for the good of the order, Sean? Cool stuff happening this week?
So some Proud Boys were putting stickers up in Harrisburg.
Nice.
And I was going around. I have like 1,000 Student Power Network stickers, PA Student Power stickers in my apartment.
That's convenient.
So people were putting them up in the Facebook group saying, hey, there's these stickers going up around town. What should we do? And I'm like, let me know where they're at. And I stickered to cover them and put up in the Facebook group. And it's like, hey, rip them down or cover these fuckers up. And
nice.
I know it actually has people like it actually started a really good conversation within like a cesspool of a Facebook group.
Yeah. Well.
About like what these stickers are, where they're going up and like just people are removing them. So, I mean, and that's what I like about Harrisburg. We have an active anti-fascist community. And no, not anti-fascist, where people are walking around in black with their faces covered. Like, no, we actually have a group of people who are, you know, we have a strong DSA community. We have a strong community of people who are willing to just go around, rip down this propaganda, or cover it up and stuff like that. Yeah. So, I mean, and that's also part of stuff that anti-fascist communities do.
Right.
So that was nice.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I like the pictures you posted too as well. It was always good to see that. It cheered me up, you know? It's like cheers you up to the day.
I know. I mean, like, no, like, you guys – but it's also you put that stuff up online. It's like, hey, cover this stuff or up or rip it down.
Right.
I prefer covering it up just to give them a couple middle fingers.
Yeah, that's always nice. That's always nice. Well, cool. I got one more thing I was kind of throw out there. I didn't mention this in the introductions today, but I've got another TV show that I've been diving in on in the kind of like Scandinavian themed TV watching that I've been doing lately. If you remember, I talked about The Rain, which it was just I've watched both seasons so far. I'm waiting. The seat's got approved for season 3. I love that one. That's more of a sci-fi future one. It's got kind of like a, like, you know, anti-corporate or kind of, you know, corporate bad practices, climate change things going for it. And then there's this other one that I had bookmarked for a while. It's called Occupied. Right. And again, it comes out of Norway, and it's actually Norway. It's the biggest, budget, TV show that Norway's ever done, I guess, and it really comes out in this. But the premise of it, right, is that there has been some catastrophic effects of climate change. So there's been these hurricanes, there's been some melting of the ice sheets, and it's caused, like, you know, some major issues, right, and problems, and that helps usher in this kind of like really kind of like climate action party to power in Norway, right? So that's the beginning of it. And, it, you know, frankly, when I heard the premise, I'm like, look, this could be kind of hokey, or this could actually be kind of interesting. And I was kind of touch and go on for the first episode, but then, no, this is great. But what's cool about this show is that it came out before 2016 election, right? So it was 2015. And basically the premise is that the this new government, right, this kind of like climate action government, basically sunk a whole bunch of research into it and a program to come up with what thorium reactors, right? Thorium is like you could have a nuclear reactor with thorium instead of uranium, and there's like much less kind of waste with it, and it's much cleaner, right? Brother, energy. It's the disposal's not as bad. It's still a nuclear thing, but whatever. But this was their push, and they're about to launch their the first reactor is about to go online, and they're going to share this. They're going to share this technology with the world, right? That's kind of the idea. So as part of what they do, making this announcement, they shut down their oil production, right? And what the premise then is like Europe freaks out. Because they get a whole bunch of they get like a third of their natural gas and their oil from Norway, right? From Norwegian sources. Norway shuts it down, right? And then the EU begins working with Russia basically to get all this stuff put back on, right? And it's a great show. And what's fascinating is seeing what they were able to kind of document and put in the show as about kind of say Russian tactics in terms of how kind of interventions in governments and kind of influencing the directions of policy. It gets all played out there, and the show kind of like I said came out before the Trump era, so it's kind of cool. So, anyways, that's my little contribution for there. So check out Occupied. You can watch it with a dub or subtitles. I prefer the subtitles, but you can hear it dubbed in English too as well. That's available on Netflix. So there you have it. Anything else for the good of the order, Sean?
No. My back is killing me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So Sean's got to go rest up and fix that. Yeah. All right. Well, everybody, hey, thanks for tuning in. I'm sorry about last week, and we'll try to keep that regular schedule going. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Thanks for tuning in to us. Remind you to become a member. Patreon.com/RC Press today. As little as $5 a month. See you next week.
I'm not a big fan of Medicare for all. I mean, I welcome the debate. I think that we should have health care.
I don't know what
all.
She's talking about.
I think that the Affordable Care Act is better than the Medicare benefit.
Why is she talking
but
so
we
slow?
We have invited advocates for it to testify in Congress, in the Ways and Means Committee, in the Budget Committee, in the Rules Committee.
Just doesn't
stop. Be respectful of the point of view.
My leg literally just cramped up.
Expensive. Who pays is very important. What are the benefits that come in there? So I would think that hopefully as we emerge into the election year, the mantra will be more health care for all Americans.
This is killing my
buzz. Because there is a comfort level that some people have with their current private insurance that they have. And if that is to be phased
out. Oh, my
out,
God, this is the world we live in, everybody.
It, but let's not just have one bill that would do
That's
that.
That's exactly how she sounded at Young Dems.
There you go, man. See everybody.